These two programmes, I've been talking to the left, the stubbornly socialist left, the thousands who vote Labour without illusions, with a clothes peg on their nose to protect their senses from the sweet and sedative aroma of parliamentary socialism. Forget the Labour Party itself. I've been talking to members and ex-members of Britain's largest, most visible, least understood anti-capitalist organisation, the Socialist Workers' Party. The SWP emerged in 1977 from a slightly looser organisation called the International Socialists, IS for short. As an ex-member, I know enough about the party to ask the awkward questions. This week, I ask individual members about their experience of being able to say comrade without the usual irony. What made them decide to join? Frank Ormston is a white-collar railway worker from York and a member of the SWP for the last 20 years.
You can talk about a Marxist way of looking at the world, but it's not a commitment to dialectical materialism that draws us together. It's a desire to make the world a better place, and all the rest is the means that how you do it. So I don't think anybody sits down and reads the whole of Marx and thinks, all right, that's it, I'm going to be a socialist. I think it comes the other way around. I think you see the injustice in the world and you decide that you want to do something about it.
A simple moral decision. You want to do something about it, but the decision is momentous. Your everyday life will be different, and some of the people you know will be shocked. Karen Reisman, a community psychiatric nurse from Manchester.
I've been in the Labour Party for 10 years and have been very active in the Labour Party, and so a lot of them were very shocked. My mum was shocked. And then I think sort of concerned about being in a revolutionary organisation and about violence and about whether it was right or not.
For some, joining the party was simply the right thing to do. For others, the process was more complicated. Jules Townsend is now Professor of Politics at Manchester Met.
It was only really when I became a student that I took Marxism seriously. In a sense, I suddenly realised there was a whole wealth of Marxist scholarship and Marxist understanding of the contemporary world, which was sophisticated. I remember reading Perry Anderson's Towards Socialism through the night. I was so excited, and I think that I joined the IS as it then was because it seemed to me an extremely creative and intelligent way of looking at Marxism and looking at the world. And I don't think one can discount the actual background of the 60s in all sorts of ways, whether it's sex, drugs, rock and roll, or whether it's the Vietnam War, the disappointments with the Labour government of Harold Wilson. It was very much a mixture of things that in a sense was influential.
For many, it was the direct experience of injustice that crystallised political commitment. Something pushes you, and you're ready. 24 years ago, Frank Ormston was on a picket line with the miners in South Yorkshire. There, unforgettably, he caught sight of the unsmiling face of state power.
I saw the force of the state being brought to bear against the NUM, against the pickets, against anybody who was supporting them. The way the media was used, with a massive campaign of lies, to be quite honest. The sort of things that I saw weren't being reflected in the media. And that started me on a trajectory of thinking, well, the stuff that I've read is right. The media, the forces of the state are being used against the working class in a very, very obvious and naked way. And if they're going to be used like that, we have to find other means to fight back against it. Around that time, I read a little book by Alex Kalinikos, and it was a sort of definitive guide to where the Socialist Workers' Party stood. It distilled everything I was thinking, and I think it was that, in the end, that convinced me to join.
I remember sitting on Balliol Lawn with two IS members surrounding me to the extent that they could and saying the time had come for me to join, and I surrendered to that pressure. But it's one thing to sign a membership card, it's another thing to carry on as a member, and it was my decision to carry on.
That was Alex Kalinikos, currently one of the leaders of the SWP. He recalls the early 70s when he was a student in Oxford. It was a time of explosive possibility. Something was happening. It was far away, in Vietnam, in California, in Prague, in Belfast, and it was just down the road in the big car factories on the other side of town.
It was a moment of great radicalisation. Even in Oxford, there was an occupation of the Central Administration buildings in 1970, and the Vietnam War, the Black Panthers, all those sorts of political movements were in the background. But I think it's also important to say that Oxford was, as it still just about is, a major industrial centre, a major centre of the British car industry. Car factories in Cowley were packed full of militant shop stewards who were leading strikes and things like that. And that, of course, reflected things that were happening in industrial centres all over the advanced capitalist world in the late 60s and early 1970s. That kind of militancy seemed to confirm one of Marx's fundamental ideas, namely that it would be the industrial working class that would overthrow capitalism. And so in deciding to join IS, as it then was, rather than one of the other revolutionary groups, it was its preoccupation with connecting people like me, middle-class students, with the industrial struggle, in my case in Cowley, that was very important.
For many, their socialism emerged from an earlier original liberalism, pushed by family history, by the energy of a new generation, by world events, helped along by reading the right books at just the right moment, a long, smouldering liberalism may just ignite. Add selections from Karl Marx and stand well back. Such was the experience of Richard Cooper. After a colonial childhood, he joined International Socialism in 1964.
I grew up in South Africa, and there's no doubt the experience of apartheid, coming to an awareness of it as a teenager, was the formative experience. I then was at university in Johannesburg when they were trying to close the university. There were a few black students, and was involved in liberal campaigns to keep the universities open. And then when I came to England to continue my studies, I just developed from there. And it felt a fairly natural step to move from a kind of egalitarianism in the South African context to a concern about what was happening in Britain, to an interest in Marxism, to a fear of what had happened in Russia, which was identified with Marxism. And for me, the most liberating experience was to discover you could be a Marxist and reject the political system of the Soviet Union.
Whatever the cause, the effect is to illuminate the world. The process has often been compared, satirically, to a religious conversion. There are similarities. Reason alone will not take you there. You were once more or less comfortably at home in your world. Now your true home is somewhere in the future. You may reach it in your lifetime, or you may not. For the moment, your new home is here, in the party. What is it like now you're in? It's a big commitment. Your time, your money, your energy. But it's not very glamorous. You're not Che Guevara. You will not be storming any presidential palaces. This is no larger-than-life countercultural romance. There are no visible bastions of the bourgeoisie. There is simply talking to people, everyday conversations that take place far from the monumental centres of power, arguing for socialism on doorsteps, on street corners, in the queue at the supermarket. Selling the paper, Socialist Worker, is your regular weekly task. When you join the party, they look you in the eye and they say, the paper is an organiser. Sell it to sympathisers, people you know on the left. Talk to them. Argue for socialism. One day, with a little push, they will join the party. Building the party, that is what we do. Karen Reisman, psychiatric nurse.
I think having a weekly opportunity to talk to sort of the public generally, you get a feel for what people are concerned about, what they're thinking about, what worries them, what hopes they have. And I think it gives you a very good grounding so that you're not out of touch.
In the old days, before 1977, building the party was less imperative. Jules Townsend recalls the time in the early 1970s when he was a student at Southampton. There, as a member of IS, he organised a campaign alongside the local dock workers.
I produced many leaflets on the issue of containerisation, and these leaflets became very influential. In fact, I remember one of the reports actually in the Financial Times was talking about the influence of the International Socialists in Southampton docks, so I was rather pleased about that. And one of the sort of key elements in Marxism is the idea of workers' self-activity, that workers actually liberate themselves it seemed to me that getting a Dockers newspaper going, and I wrote the editorials, which were not long, but they actually did the rest in terms of its actual physical production. It was wonderful because actually, you know, Dockers actually was writing poems in it, and this journal actually, you know, lasted for a couple of years. They were sold for, I think, it was a penny around the docks, but it seemed to me that this is a splendid way of acting in a hegemonic kind of way, as Gramsci would say. The Docker, as it was called, actually had enormous impact, and although I didn't recruit any Dockers to the International Socialists, we had enormous influence in Southampton Docks at the time.
As a middle-class student, he was a creature from another planet, and yet he won the trust of the dock workers. It was their show, and he was simply helping it along. These campaigns, local and national, are at the heart of SWP politics. Frank Ormston remembers a lockout at Middlebrook Mushrooms in South Yorkshire. The strikers picketed their own factory for several months, with a little help from friends on the left.
There was a good tradition built up around it of people just going along, lending the support in whatever way they could, whether it was bringing greetings from other groups of workers, whether it was bringing cash, gifts of food, whatever it might be, to help people, because they'd been deprived of the jobs, had no income. So it was a matter of supporting whatever way we could. And different people obviously had their own political views amongst the strikers as well as amongst the people visiting them, so they're often lively, comradely discussions, which was brilliant. Through it all was a fantastic spirit, and there was stuff that can stop us marching, that can stop us doing this, but they can't stop us dancing. And so there was always an awful lot of music on that picket line. People were dancing, and amidst all the sometimes horrible intimidation that was visited upon them, it was a lot of fun.
It's more fun. That would make an almighty slogan for socialism. Hey, it's more fun than capitalism. If only. If only we could forget the joyless, pseudo-socialist tyrannies of the 20th century. In that earlier world, when the SWP emerged, popular power was still largely in the hands of unionised industrial labour. The miners and the dockers, the steel workers and the car makers, they were the party's priority. The women and the students and the miscellaneous public sector professionals were welcome to join in, but they were not organised labour, and they had better preserve a respectful silence in its presence. Now those industrial workers have departed, most of them, pushed aside like the handloom weavers of an earlier age. The new anti-capitalist politics of the 21st century no longer spontaneously speaks Karl Marx. Where does this leave Britain's revolutionary socialists? Forlorn evangelists for a fading sect? Or have they always been streetwise, long-distance activists, connecting the party once again with the passionate discontents of the rising generation, imparting logic, discipline and direction to fiery, youthful energy? What magic unity potions have enabled this quarrelsome family to stay together, to survive and to evolve across the 40 years since 1968? And what of the party's latest perilous electoral venture, the Respect Coalition? Among those you've heard in this programme, some will stay in the party and some will leave. Find out next week in my further conversations with the Socialist Workers' Party, brackets, Great Britain.